until January the 14th. Now, being a Sherpa is bad for your health. If you live on the slopes of Mount Everest, you see, there's no iodine in your diet. And why would anyone want to eat iodine? Well, your thyroid gland depends upon it, and the results of iodine deficiency are pretty gruesome. We're talking birth defects and dirty great goiters around your neck. The Sherpa have run ahead of evolution. They've occupied a part of the planet to which the human body is not fully adapted. And as a culture, they've paid for that with swollen necks and the high incidence of what used to be called cretinism. But they found a social mechanism for dealing with these problems. They altered their collar sizes, and all those children disabled by iodine deficiency in the womb were given the job of carrying the water. Then came Sir Edmund Hillary, who arranged an iodine injection for every Sherpa. But that had an interesting effect. It didn't cure everybody. Two doctors, Peter Gluckman and Mark Hansen, have used the case of the Sherpas as evidence for a rather daring thesis. The evolutionary development of our bodies, they argue, is lagging behind the speed with which we are altering our environment. And the persistence of the problems of iodine deficiency in the Sherpa population suggests something else, that the bodies of babies in the womb can sometimes respond to the environmental conditions in which their grandparents lived. As neonates, we live in the past, it seems. All this is discussed in Gluckman and Hansen's book, Mismatch, and in an event of the same name that takes place at the ICA in London tomorrow night. Mark Hansen joins me now on a line from Southampton, and here in the studio with me is Ray Noble, Director of the Centre for Reproductive Ethics and Rights at University College London. Mark, human beings moving outside of their comfort zones and carving new niches for themselves, isn't that just evolution at work?
It is evolution at work, but of course, as very creative animals, we've managed to generate an environment which actually takes us well beyond our comfort zone, as you put it, Matthew, and into an area that we're just physiologically unable to adapt to. And when we can't adapt to the challenges that life throws at us, essentially we become sick. And this is why we're seeing the epidemic of obesity and diabetes and associated cardiovascular disease in developed societies like the one in the UK, but also, very worryingly, in developing countries too.
The Sherpas is a very good example. I wonder if you could throw another one at us that would sort of illustrate the problem for us.
Well, I suppose my colleague Peter Gluckman went to the Himalayas to study the Sherpas, and at the same time I went to northeastern Nigeria to study the tropical disease bilharzia, or schistosomiasis. This is caused by a small worm that literally burrows through the intact skin if you're foolish enough to immerse yourself in water in that region. And the people living in this sub-Saharan part of Africa didn't come too much in contact with water in their daily lives until somebody thought, well, wouldn't this be a wonderful place to set up an irrigation scheme and change the crops from maize to rice, and maybe even divert the waters of Lake Chad to make a tourist resort? And of course, once they did this, the mismatch that was imposed on these people was enormous. And so it's another example of how human interference can take our innate biology beyond our ability to cope.
Ray Noble, what do you make of this picture, this idea of the mismatch? Does it convince you?
Well, it convinces me up to a point. Where it worries me is whether we take it to the point where we have a notion of an ideal world to which we'd be matched, and an ideal way in which we are matched. And I don't think that that is a suitable reflection of humanity, and certainly not our biology. There's one area that I'd take Mark to task a little bit, which occurs in a piece called Things Ain't What They Used to Be in his book, where he says, if we had not tried to be matched, we would not have survived to this day as a species. I would say that if we were not mismatched, we would not have survived, because it's the very nature of our mismatch. After all, we change our environment because our bodies are naked, and we change our environment to stay warm. We have fire, we have clothing, we have housing. We deal with diseases in a whole variety of way by studying medicine, studying how our bodies work, and therefore adapting not just our biology sometimes, but also our environment in order to protect ourselves from disease.
Mark, Ray seems to be arguing that mismatch is the solution rather than the problem.
I wouldn't, in a sense, take issue with that, but I think that the key thing that he's overlooking is that the period when the match or mismatch really occurs is during our development. And I think he actually probably would agree with me that as scientists over the last 50 years or so, we've lost sight of development as an important determinant of our lives. We've argued over whether common diseases such as heart disease have a genetic origin, and then we've argued over the extent to which changes in lifestyle, exercise patterns and diet and so on can help people who have these diseases, whilst forgetting that actually the time when the match or mismatch is made is actually during our own development, and we should really be focusing more attention on that.
Well, Ray, I think that one of the things that this idea throws up is perhaps the idea that that nature versus nurture idea is a rather meaningless sort of polarity, yes,
absolutely,
really.
Absolutely right. I think this is one of the significant aspects of this book. It takes us away from the notion that somehow or other, which has been difficult for the last 30 years, that somehow or other the answers lie in the genes, and that somehow or if we understand our genome, we'd have the answers to diseases and so on. What this squarely does is to show us that there's an interaction between the environment and the way the genome expresses itself. And the critical thing, as Marx says, is that one of the points in development where that interaction occurs is during development in the womb, and therefore things like nutrition of the mother are of vital importance. That much I don't disagree with at all. In fact, I think it's a fundamental step forward in our understanding of health and disease, and it's an understanding of health and disease, not just disease. There's an interaction that produces health as well as disease, and we mustn't forget that. If we start meddling with it, we have just as much a risk, if you like, of changing things which are good. So it's not whether we take heed of this message, but how.
Well, Mark, I can see why suffering from a goiter, say, is an example of a detrimental kind of mismatch. But another one you identify, the fact that the year of our sexual maturation as a species seems to be falling all the time. Why should that be a problem?
Well, I suppose if you think of the situation of a girl who's going through menarche, the beginning of her monthly periods at maybe the age of 8 or 9, and yet she's not really treated as an adult who can vote or rent a car or take out a mortgage for maybe at least 10 years later, there's an enormous disparity between her desires, her raging hormones, and the kinds of things that she wants to do, the sort of relationships that she wants to have, and the way that society treats her. Now, this wasn't a problem in our Paleolithic past, in our Stone Age past, and actually it wasn't really a problem 100 years ago when the age of menarche was that much older, 14 to 16 years. But of course, many young girls of that time, my grandmother and my great-grandmother, were out working then. And so there wasn't really a mismatch between their ability as adults to earn a living and be seen as adult members of the community and their ability to have children. But now we've created this thing of adolescence, which goes on for 10 years.
They weren't living as long, were they? I mean, we live longer now. Where does mismatch become bad? Because, after all, you've mentioned your forefathers, and the average age that they'd be living to would be about 40-something. But now we're living much, much longer. In fact, some of the problems of modern society is due to the fact that we are living longer. We live long enough to have these late-onset diseases.
But I think, Ray, one of the problems is that the diseases we're seeing are not only late onset. In sub-Saharan Africa and in the Indian subcontinent, we have people in their 30s who are suffering from diabetes. Yeah. And the calculations are that in the next 2 decades, the number of people in India suffering from diabetes will rise to over 80 million. Well, there's no way their economy can cope with that. And these are young people who still have a substantial amount of their lives theoretically left to live and who can give an enormous amount to society. So we're seeing the mismatch happening earlier and earlier.
And Mark, what are you actually proposing that we do about this? Because it seems to me that all of this is well and good, but the effects of this in terms of how you would tack it through social policy is a whole different and much more problematic kind of area.
Absolutely, and that's something that an issue that we don't duck. In the final chapter of the book, we address some of the things that need to be considered here. One, I think, is that we absolutely have to place our attention firmly, fair and square, on better nutrition, better education, and a better lifestyle for young girls and women, even before they reach reproductive age, certainly before they become pregnant.
Well, it strikes me that a kind of prescriptive attitude towards what young women ought to be doing it would be the way in which this would sort of play out in the real world.
Yes, I'm a bit worried about that, as Mark knows, because it may be placing a sort of a burden on young women and saying, look, you're responsible for all the cardiovascular disease, the obesity, and so on, and if only you would adapt your behaviour and access sensibly, then all our problems will be solved. I think that that's a burden that they shouldn't be have placed upon their shoulders unless we empower them to make appropriate decisions about their behaviour.
Mark, that's a fair point, isn't it? Because one of the reasons why you've raised this question is because of the pressure that you sense that this mismatch idea is bringing to bear upon people. Couldn't conforming to other types of behaviour also bring its own pressures?
It may do, but if we're trying to limit the relentless rise in these chronic debilitating diseases, especially in developing countries, we absolutely have to use Ray's word there, and I think he's absolutely right. We have to empower women. We have to give them the opportunity to postpone having children to maybe 3 or 4 years after they start their periods,
and
to have an opportunity to have the
Mark, that empowerment must be economic and social. There's no quick fix here biologically. That's the crucial thing here. When we break the cycle of poverty and disease, we break it at poverty. We give people the power to make decisions about their lives so that they are healthy.
Mark, would you like to reply to that?
It certainly applies to men as well as women. We have to find ways of improving this crucial time in human development if we're to reduce the burden of mismatch.
Thanks very much, Mark Hansen and Ray Noble. And Mismatch, Why Our World No Longer Fits Our Bodies, is published by Oxford University Press. And the Mismatch event takes place at the ICA in London tomorrow night. You're listening to Night Waves with me, Matthew Sweet. This is the point at which I direct you to the